Third hour, Darren Dunnick and Chase on this Monday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good start to your week. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe with you. Max Herz, man on the board at our Wholesale Inc. Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. We head east. We're bringing Vince Ferrara back from Omaha at the College World Series, where he was out there with the Vols baseball team. WNML, the sports animal, there in Knoxville. Vince, what do you make of what we've been talking about on the show today, on everything that played out on Friday and, more importantly, on Saturday, whenever NC State's season ended that way, and all the nonsense that you've seen out there on social media and what people have been saying, basically blaming Vanderbilt for all this stuff is absurd. But what have you made of all this?
Well, blaming the Vandy Whistler is one thing, but blaming Vanderbilt is nothing. By the way, I walk out of my place with the dog going to walk on Saturday, and then I hear a bird chirping in the exact three whistle mode of the Vandy Whistler. I'm like, I can't get away from this. It's on my TV. It's in Omaha. It's in Knoxville. But anyway,
did you wake up in the middle of the night thinking you heard the whistler?
Well, thankfully there wasn't like enablers like clapping and like, you know, encouraging the bird to keep doing that. And finally it went away. But anyway, it's not Vandy's fault. There's the built-in dislike for a lot of people for Vanderbilt. I get that. And this is kind of a way to just, you know, pile on and put it in Vandy's lap. But it's not their fault. Obviously, I think the NCAA, I would have loved to have seen them try to help NC State out instead of saying, here are the rules, and you met this threshold, and we're not going to have any flexibility whatsoever. I understand. There's a lot of people from all the different fan bases, people making accommodations for a structured period of time, and for the College World Series, it's set for television for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I get all of that structuring aspect of it. But you know what? Sometimes things out of everyone's control happen, and like weather, so you have to adjust. And I don't understand, for the betterment of the student athlete, which is allegedly what the NCAA is all about, why you can't try to help and move and maybe postpone it a little bit, slide something back, work with them, and then see if you can get those athletes cleared. And a lot of people say, well, they're packing the building with, you know, the stadium with all these people, but then a couple players test positive and they can't play. I think on that standpoint, it's a different threshold, right? They are much stricter with the players and the participants and the team parties rather than the fans. The thing is that there's interaction with them. They're close to them. I mean, you guys saw the video of us in the lobby of the hotel before Tennessee's first game, and fans everywhere and speaking to the alumni and, you know, meet and greets outside the team bus and all. There's interaction with fans that you don't know whether they're vaccinated or what they are, that they're, you know, that could put them at risk. But, you know, it sounds like some of the NC State players also decided, because of any potential side effects, they were going to wait until after the season. And to me, that sounds like a pretty calculated mistake. Now, would that have made a difference in the end? Who knows? But Kendall Rogers from D1 Baseball had a great outline of the entire timeline. It sounds like NC State was frustrated with the NCAA's communication with them, which, of course, is no surprise. But just the lack of flexibility to it, I know Vanderbilt wants to keep it the way it is, but I would have liked to have seen them try to make it happen, buy them, you know, a day, a half day, something to try to make this work and settle on the field, especially because you're so close to the finish line as well. Unlike VCU in the men's basketball tournament last year, where you had so many things locked in behind you and everything connected to it, I think there was room to try to be a little bit more understanding and see if it could work. And maybe after a certain period of time it didn't, then you do it. I just, so cut and dry, though, that's the part that bothered me a little bit.
I don't know. I'm going to have to respectfully disagree. I mean, wasn't NC State the team that was least vaccinated of anybody in Omaha? Is that right? Isn't that what's being reported? Well, I mean, they according to D1, like you said, it's pretty thorough job. I mean, they as a team, for the most part, I believe they were the team that was by far had the lowest amount of numbers of vaccinated players. I'm pretty sure that's what I read. And so we've said it here a million times. I mean, that everybody to each his own. Everybody has their own right to do. But you're playing a team, but you also chose to play a team sport, and you're playing in the playoffs. I mean, you got a regional and a super regional, and now you're in Omaha. I mean, and so there are consequences for that decision as well. I mean, if they chose to do that, okay, that's fine. That's their right. But isn't it the NCAA's right to say, if you choose to do that, there are consequences. If this happens, if an outbreak happens on your team, there are consequences, and that's in the rules. And these are the consequences. I mean, shouldn't they be held to some level of being accountable for all of this?
Sure, I'm not saying NC State is without some blame in it. However, it's still your championships, and you're still talking about the student athletes, and it wasn't mandated. So yes, there's a different level. There's responsibility on everyone, the team. You know, the coach had talked about. He was asked in a press conference, NC State's coach, about. You know, vaccination and his team. He didn't want to talk about it. He's like, I don't want to get into politics.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That's not when it comes to your players and you're trying to keep them able to play, that is not politics. Maybe you talked about it to them and encouraged them privately, but didn't want to talk about it publicly. I don't know. But that made it seem like they weren't encouraging them to do it and left it open. If that's the case, then yeah, you walked into that potential situation as well.
Yeah. So how do you think this, before we move on to everything that's happened since Tennessee has come back home, how do you think this is going to play out starting tonight at 6 o'clock? All SEC national championship game.
Yeah, pretty crazy. We've seen it before. And look, Mississippi State, to me, going into the SEC tournament seemed like a dangerous team because of their pitching depth and timely hitting. And they've gotten that, and they have a lockdown closer in Landon Sims, and we see how good Bednar's been as a starter, and they just have a lot of arms they can throw at you, and the player of the year in Tanner Allen. So I fully expected to go three games. It would not shock me if they're all really close games. And you know, with Jack Leiter now, you know, available for, you know, right out of the gate for the College World Series final, That's going to be tough. And Mississippi State, I think they've hit maybe a little bit better than Vanderbilt in the College World Series in that state. Now, Vandy has gotten elite pitching, obviously. But I because of the balance offense-defense, I might give Mississippi State a little bit of an edge in three games. But I would be shocked if this is done in two either way, honestly. And, you know, we'll see how much they can stretch Leiter and Rocker and just have it Leiter, Rocker, Maldonado, Murphy. If Vandy can find a way to keep those games really low scoring and rely mainly on those arms, then yeah, they've got a great shot. I just don't know if it's going to play out that way. A lot of it depends on how the ballpark plays also, but I would give Mississippi State a slight edge. I wouldn't have said it going into the postseason or the College World Series, but you know, we'll see. It'll be fun. I think it's very close.
Yeah, is everybody taking a big sigh of relief knowing that Vitello will be back and everything is okay? LSU has filled their job. It's going to Arizona's Jay Johnson. So, what's been kind of the reaction in your market since Tennessee unfortunately was 2-and-done?
Well, it's been people have been disappointed. You know, you're always going to have your a few extreme fans on social media, but that doesn't represent most of the fan base. You know, when those players are walking off the field from right field, and they're you know, after the Texas game was over and they were hugging and emotional and things like that, and they're coming back to the dugout. But there's a bunch of fans that were down at right outside the dugout and, you know, giving them a round of applause for coming back. And, you know, they were, I think they were greeted at a little, you know, fan get together and autograph signing in Knoxville. So I think fans are very appreciative of the season. And I do think there's a sigh of relief. However, this is the University of Tennessee, and crazy things happen. And so I think there are plenty of fans that have been there, done that, and just been shocked by things out of nowhere happening. It doesn't seem like there's a gig to pull him away right now. But I do expect Tennessee to get it done. But until this is officially announced with a plan that will get started pretty soon for renovations, I think there's still some fans that are a little bit nervous.
Okay, so how much do you think, what is UT going to have to do to put all this to bed? So obviously he's going to get a big bump in pay. And then, you know, how committed are they in doing the necessary renovations to their stadium and doing the things that it takes to win at this level, in the SEC especially? You know, how quick can they move on all this? Do you expect this to be quick, or do you expect this to be NCAA quick, which is not quick?
Well, that would not be good for the program if this is NCAA quick. Tennessee has done things the really slow play before. I mean, they've done little things to Lindsey Nelson Stadium before, and, you know, paint job here, and, you know, an addition here. The turf is the most significant thing they've done, and that's been an incredibly positive investment for them. But we're talking about $20-30 million probably that they need to invest in it. How much they have their money set that's earmarked for baseball that they can absolutely commit to right now, I think that's the biggest unknown. I think UT will find a way. I don't have any doubt that they're going to make him one of the highest paid coaches definitely in the league, which also in turn will make it in the country. I'm not worried about the salary for Tony Vitello. It's what can they commit to right now in terms of facilities? Because if they don't have the money specifically for baseball and they're just getting donations in general, there's still a whole lot of work that needs to, many, many more millions of dollars that needs to be done in Neyland Stadium. So they're going to need money specifically for baseball in this project. Now, maybe they already have. I mean, those kind of things aren't public, but I would expect that once Tennessee has those things set, is when you'll see them make the announcement, and I would anticipate that they would do it. But it can't be, hey, in 2 years we're going to start phase one, and then here's, you know, in two more years phase two, and then in 9 years we'll have this complete. That's not good enough, and I would be surprised if Tennessee drags it on that far. They need to have a short order plan in place. I would anticipate them doing it, just a matter of when they have those dollars committed, I think.
We're talking to Vince Ferrara, 99.1, the Sports Animal in Knoxville, our weekly visit with him. And some football news, not great news either. Caden Salter, who has not practiced, not played a game, none of those things. He's already been dismissed from the team after a simple possession of marijuana charge. Obviously, there have been a lot of other things with him, and Josh Heupel just deciding it's time to move on. So with a team that, yes, the quarterback room is crowded, but they've been desperately trying to find the next guy, really since Josh Dobbs, but find a true starting quarterback for this team. I don't think he was going to necessarily factor into that this year, but how big is this for the program? Is it a big deal that Salter is already having to move on?
Well, it does hurt because this guy was pegged as the guy. Now it was, you know, he was committed to Jeremy Pruitt's staff, and then it did end up signing with Tennessee. He thought that, you know, with his ability to make throws out of the pocket and athleticism, and, you know, in addition to being a pocket quarterback, that you know, everything that Trent Dilfer has talked about with him, with the Elite 11, I mean, just so many really positive signs that he could be the guy. Now, you're right. I don't think it was going to be this year. It was probably a long shot for it to be this year prior to his initial suspension. And then coming back from that, he had that that marijuana possession charge as well. Just not decisions that are in line with guys that you need to lead your program. And I think because of where they're at right now, that Josh Heupel could not afford to keep doling out these kind of chances to guys that don't show the leadership and the decision-making that you need on and off the field. And, you know, one time, that's one thing, but to have it multiple times before you've ever been able to practice. This guy was here at Tennessee for 6 months, never practiced, and it was because of his own doing. So, you know, it's unfortunate for him. I just don't get some of these decisions. I know young people, things like that, but not all young people make those kind of mistakes when you have that kind of college playing career, pro playing career in front of you. So hopefully he gets it figured out and fresh start somewhere else and he's able to have success. But I think it was more about, hey, we're not going to play it this way. We're setting the tone early. And Heupel has been pretty consistent with that with guys off the field. And, you know, it'll come down to more of those veteran guys that for this year that do have a commit for next year in the class. But yeah, it sets you back and not having a freshman from this class to kind of keep that year-by-year quarterback staggered.
And then they've had a couple other players that Malachi Wideman, a wide receiver, left the team. He's now in the transfer portal. Greg Emerson now in the transfer portal. So that little trend continues for Tennessee football.
Yeah, Tennessee is the poster child for the transfer portal. I mean, it's ridiculous. I'm honestly lost count. It's in the mid-20s. We'll have to update it and go back and look. But, you know, Wideman was the highest rated of the four wide receivers in last year's freshman class. They converted a quarterback to wide receiver, so ended up being five, and he was the highest rated of them. He also played basketball and thought that maybe he could play hoops as well as football at Tennessee. He had one catch from Harrison Bailey last year for 24 yards in the Missouri game, and you thought, all right, maybe he's starting to come around, but then we didn't see him catching the ball the rest of the year. So that's disappointing. And then Greg Emerson has just kind of been a rotation guy on the D-line that has been in and out of the starting lineup. So, you know, they don't have a ton of bodies on that D-line as it is, and if you're going to play more four-man front, that gives them now 12 defensive linemen for a four-man front. That's not big depth. So it's just more of a body more than a difference maker, but they don't have any other difference makers either. So that's where the depth can hurt you even more. They're not going to be at 85. I don't think there's any way right now. And who knows if they can bring somebody in the transfer portal. But it's been, unfortunately, too much of a turnstile on the way out. And maybe it's, you know, losing guys and then it'll be positive down the road, but never heard of, you know, Emerson being a problem. It's, you know, just hadn't been a difference maker so far.
Vince, in 1974, the University of Tennessee hired a 22-year-old to be a grad assistant, and then that person became a head coach at the school, of course, of the women's basketball team. That person was Pat Summitt, making $250 a month. And she goes on to become one of the greatest coaches of all time with 8 national championships, over 1,000 wins during her time with the Lady Vols. And I cannot believe that it has been 5 years since she was taken from us, way too soon. But that impact, I mean, you go and you read the stats and they speak for themselves, but her impact is continue to be felt not only at the university but in college sports overall.
No doubt. And every week, maybe even more frequent than that, her name comes up in regards to something, whether it's a former player bringing her up and talking about her impact and how she shaped them as, you know, a woman, as a person, or if it's others in coaching, if it's fans, players from other sports. And she comes up, fans, obviously, she comes up all the time still, and I don't think that's going to change because of how incredible the impact she had in developing people and mentoring them, and much beyond the sport. And obviously her coaching tree is incredible, and it continues to grow, but it's astounding that one person could, you know, impact so many lives and continue to do so. But that more than the, you know, the 8 national championships and, you know, the almost 1,100 wins and all those kind of things, keep going on, graduated 100% of the players, and going on. It's the personal impact and relationships that she had with student athletes and the connection with the fans, and then the respect throughout all of the sports world, women's college basketball, other sports, to be held in that regard by so many people is just so rare and iconic, and that's not going away, the appreciation for it. I agree. You know, then it's crazy. It's been 5 years.
You know what's amazing, too? I feel like everybody has a Pat Summitt story. And, you know, yep. You think, okay, well, she's this famous basketball coach and greatest of all time. And so, yeah, everybody's going to come up with a story. But the truth is, everybody really does have a story, because that's the kind of person she was. Like, she, if she interacted with you, yeah, you had a story. You had a Pat Summitt story, because she was going to make time for you, because that's just the kind of genuine person that she truly was.
Yeah, and I could share them, and just could down at some point. I don't want to bog you guys down, you know, with it now, but there, she definitely did that to me, and you could see her interact with fans that, you know, you would think, wow, she's pretty busy. She's making time for them. And she had a way of making everyone feel important. When everyone felt like she was the most important person in the room, she had that ability. That's very difficult to do. It's very special. And you guys know, when fans have an opportunity, even just one time, to interact with famous athletes or coaches or figures, that's something that sticks with them. And if you can do it right, they'll always, always remember that and impact them. And her doing it right all the time, multiply that by all the people that she interacted with and did it right, that's the way you get the respect and iconic status that she had.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll say this too. Holly Worlick had the impossible job. I mean, it just, to follow that up, and I know fans didn't like, you know, what happened, where the program went, but I mean, you still have to, the impossible job, and how the circumstances of Pat having to retire when she did. I will always, you know, just kind of feel bad for Holly Worlick having to do that, but she got her chance, so there's that. But Vinny, appreciate the time as always. We'll do it again next Monday.
All right, guys. Have a great week. Appreciate you.
He is Vince Ferrara, 99.1, the Sports Animal in Knoxville. Joins us every Monday at noon. And yes, 5 years ago today, we lost Pat Summitt at the age of 64. So still hard to believe, but I know she had an impact on a lot of people. We'll have more coming here on Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.